Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer. All lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Today's episode is courtesy of the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get your iPhone 7 with the fantastic camera and gather around for another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
Thank you for that wonderful intro, and let me...
It is the greatest camera ever in the new iPhone.
You've got the big iPhone, too. I know.
It's the greatest camera. It's picture quality.
We are privileged to welcome Eden Sassoon to the program today. She's, of course, on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She is the daughter of the late hairstylist and legendary hairstylist and philanthropist Vidal Sassoon. And tell us about what your projects are these
days.
Thank
you, both of you, for having me. This is wonderful.
You're into all kinds of stuff.
Let
me list it. You tell us about it.
Well, you know, everyone's like, what do you do for work? I said, what does that mean? I live my life, and then I open businesses around it and pay it forward. So I very much lead by example. But in losing my father, I wanted to open a salon. And that's exactly what I did, Eden by Eden Sassoon, to sort of create how it was like growing up in a salon, but how I see fit today.
I feel like I drove past this.
On Sunset Plaza?
Yeah. It's such a...
Where Tower Records used to be.
Sunset, no, further east.
Yeah, further east. But...
Yeah.
By Mel's Diner.
Exactly, across the street from Mel's Diner.
Yes,
there's
I know
good juice
exactly
bar.
Where it is.
Yes.
Yep. It's a good juice bar right there.
Primo's right next door and Equinox and everything else.
I drove past it. I was thinking about it, too. And it's weird. I had a little conversation myself. I said, Sassoon, is he still around? How's that work?
Drew tends to frown on the 70s, but the 70s were great.
Well, I was born in 73, and so I remember just enough.
She didn't live through the 70s. She was born
I was there.
I was, too.
I was at what's the name of the Fiorucci in Beverly Hills?
Oh, I remember.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. It was a great era. Blondie was playing in the clothing store, Drew.
Now, hold on a second. Before people start complaining about Bob, hold on a second. Can you turn his mic down a little bit?
Oh,
I think that may be what people are complaining about. He's very loud.
It's loud, like, too.
No, you're good.
So you know.
You're good. Okay, so move your mic away from your mouth.
Okay.
Good voice.
There you go.
I love it.
We're getting away from the point that the 70s were the greatest era ever for having fun and music.
What about the roller skating rink?
Yeah. Flippers.
Yes.
How come,
I saw Prince there.
How come people aren't taking to task the behavior of, say, people like the Led Zeppelin, who used to burn cigarettes on women and
don't tell me that.
Oh, terrible stuff.
They're still doing that. Bill O'Reilly's still doing that.
No, not like that. Not like that.
Wait, was this out of like a painful evil thing or like a sort of sexual?
No,
this
painful,
is fun.
Like the thing was, oh, these women in America will let us do anything to them. Watch.
Isn't that what Trump said on the videotape?
Bob, stop with the. Well, what he said was, and I would challenge women
because
to...
Because he's famous, that he can do anything he wants.
What?
And that's the same
that's
thing,
ridiculous.
Same thing Led Zeppelin was saying 40 years before.
Well,
I don't know if that was fame
okay.
or like music and sex and drugs and rock and roll.
I'm just saying the music and the art and all of that, I look at that in the 70s and Vidal Sassoon was there.
You're right. You're right.
At the center of
you're right.
You look at the psychopathology of the people.
Listen, you're right that the art, the cinema, the art, the
but
music.
But then haircutting became
haircutting.
A thing.
Yes, I agree. Listen, I went through a
salon. I used to go with my mom. It was so great.
In the late 50s, 60s, he started, you know, and I didn't really realize until he passed that, wow, that's my dad. It's, you know, he cuts hair.
Just your dad, yeah.
Right. And then he passed and I thought, oh my God, this is a man that created an empire.
He's iconic.
I mean, he was an artist, and then he
changed
everything.
The culture.
How many times did you mention? I mean, as long as I've known, it comes up all the time.
I was a hairdresser.
No.
I was a hair cutter when I was 17, 18 years old. I went to beauty college, and I used to take my mom to Vidal Sassoon because she had sort of that typical haircut, like for her birthday.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to I wanted to go to his training camp.
Which camp? Camp. His schools, yeah.
But then I broke leg when I was 22, and I couldn't do hair, so I went into modeling and radio and television. So, I love Vidal Sassoon. All his techniques
Everybody
were amazing.
Does. You ever met somebody that doesn't like him?
Now that the younger generation.
She learned his technique.
He represents the 70s to me, Drew.
I agree with that.
In fashion and hair and beauty and what he gave to women.
It's 1978.
Empowerment.
So, and freedom and just like wash and go. And it was a movement. And granted, I was obviously just young and his daughter. But we would sing the songs all the time and run around, me and my friends, and make fun and, you know.
Then it became like a brand, which I think it was one of the original brands.
Yes,
it was. There is a whole generation of people that don't know about the salons themselves or the schools. Just know there's a shampoo called Vidal Sassoon shampoo.
Because they see it now in the supermarkets on the bottom of the shelf in Ralph's. And they didn't realize, oh, this is a man. This is someone who created the empire. This is someone who really put forth his life into... You know,
it was just fun. I used to go there with my mom. It was just fun.
It's fun.
It was just larger than life. There was a woman named Olive Grace who was best friends with my mom, and she was friends with Pamela Mason. They all three used to go to the one in Brentwood. There was one in
Beverly Hills. Santa Monica or Westwood.
Yeah. Westwood.
Yes. I was in Newport
Beach. I would go there.
Yeah, the Newport.
And I would go there, and it just was so fabulous. I was like 11, 12.
But there's a lot of drugs there, though, I bet.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I mean, so to have that around, because obviously it's the one who's leading the environment, I'm hoping that my salon is not full of any of that, and I think I would pick up on it.
From their perspective, from the hairdressers.
Perspective, Coke was non-addictive then.
Cocaine was non-addictive in the 70s. It literally was being promoted as just a fun alternative.
Don't you wish you'd been born a few years earlier?
No, because I watched everyone.
That went well into the 80s, that notion of, hey, this is.
Did it really? No.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
You're telling me that people thought cocaine was not addictive?
Yeah, non-addictive.
For a decade.
I've never done it, by the way.
It literally...
I've watched too many people die and overdose and...
It literally wasn't until...
I've done other
things.
Well,
that's not the right route of administration.
Well, I've done... Is like phentermine, the diet drug, considered... It's almost like cocaine, right?
No, it's different. It's about speed.
So I wouldn't know. Oh, it's speed. Don't tell me that. I can't.
Well,
I was young. It was fun.
It's the speed.
I painted my whole house in one night. they came home from the club, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm painting the walls.
What's speedy about that? There's no speed there.
What do you want to do? You want to go out? It's 4:30 in the morning. I'm done painting.
Oh, my God. Sounds wonderful, but be that as may. But you're in recovery now?
Oh, I'm sober now. Yeah. This was when I was
I was reading sort of about some of your things about 12-step and all, and you guys are very similar in your sort of feelings about the program and stuff.
We are.
Yeah, I think.
I can tell you that it's hard for me to go to a lot of meetings because that matter. that's not true. I do go, and I
I have this theory. It's a Southern California thing. Southern California is the center of all rehabs. There's 2,800 rehabs in Southern California, like that. And the rehab speak started to spread and pollute the waters of the 12-step world.
And the replacement. Everyone's on drugs.
Doctors are telling people they don't need to know. But there's something.
But that's an interesting question.
But that's been going on forever.
What kind of drugs?
Benzos. But benzos were going on in the 80s and people were being quieted about it.
So Valium type drugs, Suboxone. Those are the two that worry us, and you could argue Seroquel, Neurontin, other things are being highly pushed.
Questioned.
Yeah.
But I really think it was just well hidden in the 80s and 90s with the benzos. Suboxone is so out in the open, it can't really – it immediately –
Right. Can you tell me what that is?
It's a replacement drug for heroin.
It's like methadone.
Oh, so they put you on that to take you off.
Well, it was designed for that, but they leave them on.
Yeah, it's a maintenance drug.
And by the way, I pulled the original article that started the whole thing, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to read the abstract at the event. We're speaking in New Jersey. This will already have happened by the time this airs, but we're speaking soon in New Jersey. It literally was with Chris Christie and maybe is your other buddy –
Hopefully Ted Cruz will be there.
Crazy.
Those are my new buddies. I wonder when I walk into a meeting if they're going, this guy's a Republican?
Well, they know better.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
But yes. Where was I?
That's true.
So the original article says, this is the perfect drug because the addicts find it agreeable. They say it's the most rewarding drug they've ever taken, and there's no withdrawal. And I thought, are you kidding?
They say they're that about Adderall, too.
They're telling you this makes them high, and they want it. It's like, you kidding me?
But at the end of the day, it all comes back down to money, right?
Well,
I mean, the drug companies are pushing.
I don't know that it's that anymore. I think it initially was 15 years ago because there was no need for Suboxone, and they were trying to push it. But now when 60,000, 70,000 kids are dying of it, I'm for it in the proper context.
Right, as am I. Right? Just like marijuana, now that it's legal and everyone's smoking and it's okay. Hold on a second. This is out of control.
Yeah,
completely out of control.
Yeah, we always do that. We have to go all one way and all the other until we find some rational.
Right, and and alcohol. Come on. It should not. Sorry, obviously that's a huge issue, but it's legal. Why? Obviously, financial reasons, and people are insane.
Well, no, that's how the normal guys argued for pot.
Yeah,
because alcohol causes violence. Yeah, we know that.
Oh, no, I'd much rather run into somebody on pot than alcohol. But
Dr. Drew just said that.
I would. In a dark alley, you want some drunk, geeked out guy. You want the stoner.
I was just at Coachella for 2 weekends. Trust me, I saw some drunk people.
That's awful. Sorry, Coachella. But
I think
awful.
There's something even worse, more pernicious going on as it pertains to the silliness around our laws, which is there's a morality, a weird moral sort of high ground that everyone sits in judgment of people that use substances.
I think it's coming down.
Alcohol, good. Marijuana, bad.
Oh, that. But
heroin.
I think
the terrible. Bad person.
Right. Everybody, to each their own.
Well, even if people can't control their liquor. But I think the public is becoming more aware of trauma, more aware of addiction.
Maybe.
And everybody's becoming more open-minded about it.
Well, of course. And then you stick someone like me on the Housewives of Beverly Hills, and we talk about addiction, and we're up against, Kyle and her sister, not up against, but dealing with that issue.
Yeah. Oh, you're up
against her. And then you have to talk about.
There's a compare and contrast.
Well, yes, and then my sister, and that all comes to play, and then
your sister died of addiction.
She overdosed, yeah. And then we talk about but you're on medication, and they judge me for that. Yes, I have a doctor, and I'm prescribed, and I had anxiety and depression when I lost my sister, my best friend, and my father.
The tapestry that is the process of drug addiction recovery. We need a whole.
It's
loom. We need a gigantic, tapestry.
We
can't talk
exactly.
About it. Yeah, that's what I'm sort of advocating at this presentation. But like a Kylie, which is the one that's got
Kyle
the
or Kim?
Kim's got the bad addiction. Kim, somebody like that, and we used to treat lots of people like that, has to she has to be just
dead on
all the time.
Therapy,
period. Meetings three times a day.
Yes,
that's it. That's
yes,
it. That's
yes,
it. Because she has imminently life threatening addiction.
I agree.
And that's what we used to deal with. So we're like, that's what you have to do because
that would have been someone like my sister.
Exactly.
Completely.
Someone in
and
the
my
middle.
My brother who's going through it right now.
Someone in the middle. It's like, all right, well, there's alternative ways of approaching this. I get that.
And there's ride along. I ride along with people. I know they're struggling, but they're not ready to get sober yet.
Yeah,
so
well,
I'm just
common.
I befriend them. I love them. I text
that's
them.
That's where
I
I'm
come,
at now
right?
To love them instead of
your brother,
try to.
With your brother?
Well, my brother, my adopted brother, David, who is. He's in the middle of it now, and we offered, come back home, go to Cry Help. He's got nothing.
Cry
he lost
help.
It all.
Wow, you are a serious MF-er.
Oh. I'm done. And now, and he said, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to go to the ranch in Palm Springs. I said, then we're done.
The ranch
we're done.
Is all right.
You know what?
The Desert Hot Springs.
Hey,
it's in Desert Hot
it's
Springs.
Not, it's not Cry Help.
It's the same thing. If it's
no
the
way.
Ranch in Desert
Cry Help
Hot
is Cry
Springs.
Help.
It is. And he said, we check in, and it's 2 weeks later. I'm like, you can keep doing meth or drinking or whatever you're doing, but we're done. We're done. We're done. I'm sorry. I just opened my mom and my brother up to you and everything that's going on. And we one last time said, here's our effort, and he didn't take it. And I think I've come to the same.
You have to, in order for it to be. Boy, you're doing a lot of sighing here.
This has just been going on.
Well, I will tell you, the one thing I would urge you to do if you can manage it is make sure there's somebody in your court. I'm sure you have a therapist or something.
I don't necessarily. I can sit on the couch. I talk to my psychopharmacologist, and he sits there and he listens to me. And he's
Then get an Al-Anon sponsor. You need somebody in your court so you can detach with caring and not anger.
Can
and
I just say, please detach me from my brother?
Well, you can, but you're going to do it when it comes to how you tell him. Inevitably, we get frustrated and angry.
I love you, but go fuck yourself.
The go fuck yourself.
Go find your life. I was down and out. Fine. I was hurting. Fine. I was broken.
Fine. Right there. But the disease makes us angry and frustrated, and they'll poke at us. You know, they know how to do that. They do it automatically, right?
Yeah.
And so we have to have people with us. When we're therapeutically dealing with patients, I bring somebody like him in the room with me. Because I know I'll get stuck. I'll get spun into
it. So how would you deal with my brother other than just say, goodbye, I'm done?
Goodbye with love. I love you. I wish you the best. I can't be a part of this. And yeah, right. Right. But it's hard to do.
Difficult.
It's hard to do.
Very difficult.
In losing my sister and then dealing, I have a very, like my father, I think, low threshold for addicts. I'm sorry. Because I know what I went through. And I think
Another way to approach it.
How?
I have no skill with this, and I would not recommend it for anybody, but I've seen it work, and it's certain people that can pull this off. Go, you're a lying sack. Just come down.
That's what I do.
You're a lying sack of shit.
Thank you.
You don't have any prayer of sobriety. Here's a number to call, but you have no prayer of doing it, so good luck. And I've seen people out of resentment to that get sober.
I kind of go in that direction. I get really intense and
well. Be
and
careful. That's
brutal.
A very dangerous way to go.
For me, or for them, because I'm
it can hurt them. Yeah, they
hurt them.
Well, right nowadays,
but it's
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There was a guy out in Denver in Arapahoe House that would do that. He was an intake guy, and he's a long term sober guy. And he just knew who to do that to, and he would do it. And they would click into it,
and you know what?
They would
right.
go. No, they
oh,
would go
the other way.
They would go way deep and go fuck you and go. I'll show you this kind of thing. Right, and that's a dangerous thing. That's a dangerous.
Right.
I could never do that.
Yeah.
As a physician, you know?
And then again, I don't do it to people who I'm not interacting with. I'm not,
not close
by
to.
Any means. Yeah.
Well, I just try to use a rule of thumb. I say what I can live with myself saying, regardless of the outcome.
Yeah.
So if they kill themselves, or if they die of a drug overdose, or they get sober, whatever I said, I can live with all three of those outcomes. Yeah. Or they stay the same.
Yeah.
Right. And at a certain point when you're so frustrated with somebody, the 12-step rules are, listen, I've tried to help them too many times and it doesn't work. Somebody else needs to do this now, right? Mm-hmm. And so whether it's a family friend or a therapist or just turn it over to somebody else if it's not working.
Well, his sponsor just left him, said, I'm done with you too.
Okay.
So,
well, eventually you get the message. I was your brother.
Well, that's what I'm hoping.
Everybody was done with me.
I told,
even my drug dealer was wanting me to go to rehab.
It's true. One of the big drug dealers said, Bob, you're out of control. You need to go. And I was in his life back then, the 88 or something.
Yeah.
And I told everybody, I go, sorry, we can't be around this guy. We cannot. He's dead. He's going to be dead any minute. I don't want to be a part of it. So I coached everybody. I said, say your farewell. Grief. Deal with the grief. It's over.
What, I survived 7 more years like that.
Wow.
Yeah. 15 years later or something, I was giving a lecture, and this guy sitting in the front row, and I'm like, well, couldn't be Bob Forrest because that guy's dead.
Wow.
And here I am with little kids.
That's
amazing. How old are your kids?
My daughter is, she'll be 11. Sorry, she'll be 12. And my son's 10. He'll be turning 11.
So you're in the middle of all that.
Yeah, which is beautiful. I love sobriety. To me is just everything. And it's not, I don't go to the meetings every day. I don't turn.
I got a question for
you.
When you were a kid, what was the age you were allowed to go ride your bike around the neighborhood to a friend's house a couple blocks away?
When I was a kid, I could pretty much do whatever I want because my mom is a recovering alcoholic. I had my nannies giving me the love I needed. But my dad was building an empire. No one had...
So you could go. I was thinking about that because I'm thinking about Elvis. Like, he took his scooter and went down the street yesterday.
Everybody freaked out.
His 6-year-old. I was kind of like, is this the right thing?
Well, today,
I don't know. Yeah. What would other people think? I don't know where he is right now.
I'm not
you know
as
what
worried.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a dirt road that only goes down to another kid's house.
I would say go. Have fun.
I know, but we're a hysterical society.
Oh, I'm not.
I'm
like, learn the hard way. Go do it. Guess what? I was you. You're going to be me. I'm divorced. I'm single mom. You know, why don't bring in men to your kid's life? Look. My daughter could be me. She could get married. She could get divorced. And here I am pretending that I don't have male friends or that I'm very open and honest with my children.
You understand what I'm saying, though? 100%. The social norms have changed.
Because I realized
I was 8 when this happened.
When you cut your finger off.
Yeah, I was riding through Venice on my bicycle on Venice Boulevard.
Oh, nice.
Going over
Nicely
to a friend's
done.
House at dark. It was like sunset. crashed into a car on Venice Boulevard, right? Kids used to ride their bikes places.
If that happened to your kid today, though, you'd be investigated by child protective services. That's the truth of it.
But it's
also a legal standard now, too. It's not just a social standard. There's a, and to some extent, of course, that's good, but we've become hysterical as a result.
Hysterical is
Look,
a good
I
name.
Tell my children, and I'm sorry, I'm not sorry for saying this, not to have kids. This world is that, can be that torturesome and that hard for some people where you see, you don't, they don't have the light. They don't see it and they can't grasp it.
The problem is the people who elect not to do so are precisely the people I wish would. You know what I mean? They're the ones that ought to.
Right.
The wrong people are having them.
It's just painful. It's hard. And if you don't have the right tools and no one's teaching people those tools, and why aren't we more into spirituality than all these things? Everyone lives in this box. Well, who put us in this box and we can't think outside of it and do things that are different? And like sobriety or like AA, there's so many ways to heal energetically and spiritually. And I mean, with shaman, so.
Well, he wrote a book about narcissism and the narcissistic culture that America has become. Has a sort, it's almost like an authoritarian narcissism, where this is the way it's supposed to be, and you have a divide. This is the way it's supposed to be, the liberal progressive way, or this is the way it's supposed to be, the good old days, right?
I'm following. Go ahead.
And so there's no center anymore. There's no common sense anymore. It's either all crazy or that way, or all crazy this way.
That's true.
What I found interesting in the French elections, they.
Is that over now?
Well, now goes the second round. They took the two extreme. They're going in.
Macron and
Le Pen. Le Pen, the woman whose dad was the crazy guy. Yeah. So it's not just America. The whole world is going either this way or that way.
True.
It's crazy because most of us are somewhere in the middle. I think that's where common sense is. Common sense is in the middle.
Well, I feel like the cultural archetype is shifting.
Completely.
Yeah, and I don't know what it's shifting into. I feel like we had this, and I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and I've not discussed this with you, but because I usually was sort of, I was like, that's all nonsense. But lately I've been trying to think, you know, the anthropology of archetypes probably has real meaning across historical arcs. And I think we probably had a hero archetype going into the Second World War. Mm-hmm. We came out of it. We were the vanquishing hero, and then we spawned a group, several generations that became the anti-hero, that they've glorified antisocial, right? Rock stars, music, drug addicts, that's became what's good. And we're sort of at the tail end of all that now. It's kind of, we're kind of burning ourselves out by splitting into camps, just like you're describing.
Yeah.
And we need a new unifying archetype. And I think it's something like a hero again, because it's the opposite.
It's technology.
Well, no, that's bad.
I know.
It's the opposite. It needs to be the opposite of victim, because the victim has been very much a part of the problem lately.
And so
feeling
is,
victimized.
This stuff is why you feel that we shouldn't bring children into the world. I'm of the opposite. I believe that free thinkers and kind of people that have a...
I think that way too, though.
Because it's crazy, but it's true that the movie Idiocracy, you ever seen it by Mike Judge?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Very funny.
It's not funny. It's real. True.
Let's put it this way. Everybody ends up watching a TV show, and it's one TV show called Ouch My Balls.
It's
just Ouch My Balls.
And people get,
it's one TV show. Everybody watches it.
And everything is sponsored by Carl's Jr.
Okay, well, it's scary and funny at the same time. Yeah. This is horrifying.
Yeah. I know.
And doesn't Terry Crews become the president?
Yeah, the fighter. Yeah. Because he can. The president
there
is the guy who
Starbucks
can kick everybody's
McDonald's.
Ass. Yeah, Starbucks is a prostitution place in the movie.
Is it really? That's genius.
Yeah, it's got a certain kind of genius.
But
yeah.
What caused it was that the rational, intelligent, educated people didn't have children, and the irrational, uneducated people procreated like crazy.
So there's no real fix.
We need a balance.
Yes,
a balance of center.
Yeah, but what would the archetype be? You guys
of
the
who the
thinking.
Centrist would be?
What's the story we tell ourselves that gets us out of this? What would the you know, the hero story,
the cooler,
the antisocial story.
I think within, who are you?
But it has to be an archetype. We have to follow a narrative. What's the narrative that sort of the cultural narrative that we all could buy into?
The courage. You understand what I'm asking? It's courageous.
It is courageous. It's courageous. I totally agree with you. Courageous. So what? I 100% agree.
It's courageous for me, a progressive, to say, really, I'm not concerned with the radical left ideas that they're trying to shove down the throat of America right now. This is not the time or place to be going radical. This is the time and place for coming together and finding solutions.
Right, I'm with you.
But now
that takes courage Republicans and Democrats.
Okay, so where is there an archetype, a mythological archetype that follows that path of courage? Is it Homeric courage?
Solomon.
A lion?
Solomon.
I sort of agree. I keep thinking it's a wizard or wisdom or something. Yeah, it's something.
Experienced
it all. Why
do you
guys go to the male? I'm feeling a female goddess.
Fine.
A complete goddess.
Okay.
She is just sort of shining this light, but full of wisdom and sitting there and just has it together and sees it all. And
Shiva.
I'm officially.
Right? Is Shiva feminine?
I call it Eden. I don't know.
I'm first of all officially an asshole because I kept trying to think about this.
Males.
And I only thought of males.
Both of you. I heard it. I'm like, wait, hold on.
Officially, I'm an asshole.
And I'm more alpha than female. So I'm going
to I think you're right that we've got to find that.
Back
Athena
to like the center of the earth, the female create, we bring people into this world. No woman is honoring that too much.
We need to watch see what the myth of Athena is. Although I don't know if we could shift we probably could.
Well, why? I think that women are, more powerful than men. Well, not more powerful, but are coming up and becoming that, and men are more accepting of it.
I 100% agree with you. However, I'm worrying that it's so much about founding fathers in this country. This is a major shift to go then to Athena.
And if we start teaching our daughters, daughters.
I'm for it. For it.
Don't
get me wrong.
It's certainly not Elizabeth Warren. I can tell you that.
I know.
Who's Elizabeth Warren?
Elizabeth Warren is this lefty that's going to run for president, supposedly.
What? See, you know, I'm not huge on politics because
apart. Right.
So you have always been a Republican?
No.
He's the opposite.
But I now have in the last 6 or 7 years, I've gone. Here's this interesting thing. My friend is known as a Democrat, right? But he says he was a Republican during Reagan, and the Republicans just moved so far away what he believes, and Clinton came from the left to the center, and he said, "Oh, I must be a Democrat now." I feel like that happened to me.
Yeah.
As a Democrat, they just moved so far to the left that common sense and the center is now becoming the weird Kasich, right? Kasich was the one that I thought made sense.
But
right?
He was too much of an old boy, you know, white male kind of thing.
And he's a bore, too. Yeah.
But I agree with you. From a standpoint of ability, that's like, oh, Ted Cruz, can you imagine?
What?
Just, I was thinking.
Maybe I can progress him along. Oh.
He's a smart guy. I'll give it.
Oh, yeah. Harvard.
We're here with Eden Sassoon. She obviously is a delight, and she's on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. You can see her there. You can go visit her salon on Sunset Boulevard.
More so, I have 2 Pilates studios. Because
where are they?
Your body's not, you know.
Where are they?
Intact,
which is what I wanted to talk about.
Your mind isn't.
I wanted to talk about
look how healthy her hair looks.
Yeah.
This it's is Balmain extensions. Thank you.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Susan, find her extension.
Where'd you get that at?
Oh, my girl comes in every 6 weeks from the East Coast.
Well, how much is real and how much is not?
Well, so my real length is, look, right there.
The brown,
hold on. The brown, exactly. This is healthy. A lion's head of hair, but
that's healthy looking hair.
I had to do it because it was short for so long. I'm like, you know what? I went Sassoon and now I got to go back to Eden.
You know Carrie White?
Yeah, she was my sponsor.
There you go. We'll take a break and we'll be back with that.
Now, one of the most amazing parts of working in treatment is seeing a number of former patients successfully move on and choose to become mental health professionals themselves. Yes, I've seen it. And the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners has not been greater and never been greater. If you're considering this rewarding career, I suggest you look at the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've been familiar with Alliant for some time now. I've spoken at their events. It was founded in 1969, boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer an APA-accredited doctoral program in clinical psychology that allows for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. Faculty is industry leaders. Former faculty includes names like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl. Come on now. Those are names everyone's heard, some of the fathers of modern psychology. For more information on the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, check the Alliant banner on my site or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu. That is Alliant.edu. Welcome back. And I did want to talk to Eden about sort of there's so much now about the body and emotional life, and there's so much going on right now that I'm beginning to think of the brain more as a system that identifies and expresses emotion, but actual feelings are in one of these regions of our body. Yeah.
A little lower down, too.
Yeah. Well,
three. Pelvis, yeah. Abdomen, chest. And really what we need
You're the one that opened my mind to that, because so many, I would say, 35 to 45-year-old women who had suffered trauma, mm-hmm. who came into our treatment center, mm-hmm. had fibromyalgia pain. And pain mm-hmm. in the lower
pelvic
region.
Pain and stuff,
and he
yeah.
said, this is a psychic thing, mm-hmm. right? And at the time, fibromyalgia was a big diagnosis
right.
that everybody
well,
was
jumping on. Let's be fair. Fibromyalgia is a syndrome. It exists, and it's largely, in my humble opinion, a sleep disorder. If you restore their sleep, their fibromyalgia gets better. And then if you connect them to their body, you tone down the insular cortex. There's a part of your brain that just goes, everything's on fire all the time. Everything's a mess. It's called the insular cortex. So we literally have I'm going to talk about heal in just a second, but no, I'm going to talk about heal right now. Then I'm going to tell you about the homunculus.
Heal is get adopted.
Say this word, homunculus, when I finish heal.
Homunculus.
This is a group I work with. I'm on the advisory board for it. It's heal.com, HEAL.com. They have a doctor in your house within 2 hours.
For $99.
$99 all in.
No.
$99.
If you're major insurances, just copay typically. And it's.
This
we
is great.
Carefully select every one of these people. Some of them are double board certified, peds and medicine or family practice. And they are high quality. People don't understand. When you go in an emergency room, you're paying for all that infrastructure, all those people running around, all that equipment. And by the way, they have a standard where they have to do all these labs and things.
Yeah,
they have to because legally is an issue.
Right.
When a guy comes to your home or a woman comes to your home and pays attention to you and they're
skilled.
The way
medicine had been done in America for 150 years.
Done, guess what?
With their little black bag.
It's $99. So go to heal.com or get the app. It's in most major cities.
Can we
so
just
and
talk
that's
about
incredible.
That for a second.
Yeah, wait, hold on. That's incredible because a lot of doctors that I've seen, went to the concierge service. And you have to pay $25,000 and they'll come whenever you want. Well, that's insane for most people.
You don't need to do that. While on the other hand, people are willing to pay, $300, $400, $800 in emergency room or urgent care visit when it's only $99 or your copay. And that's
two hours.
And no waiting and no traffic. They come to you 2 hours.
We've got to get America to stop thinking the way they do about medicine. That's a key. I know you're into health and wellness.
Oh, my God,
it's a key to all of this. One of the things I grew doctors used to be family friends, and they used to come over to your house when one of your family members
were
sick.
All my doctors are my...
And while they were there, they'd say, Ida, you're smoking again. God damn it, you got to stop smoking.
Yeah.
Right? To my dad.
Yeah.
They were a part of the family, and they knew each individual family member, and they came to our house.
Yeah, and you were connected, and you trusted.
And there was something about when Dr. Beam, his name was, came to deal with me when I was going through whatever sickness I was going through. He would also see my mom and dad... marriage counsel them.
Now we do want you to move over a little bit here because they're going to start a Facebook
Do you know what
live.
I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, listen.
Marriage counsel.
So this was common up to the 60s.
But here's why.
This is very common.
Here's the biggest problem. We need to get attorneys and bureaucracy out of medicine. The more attorneys are backed off and doctors are allowed to do their job, it becomes efficient again. Because as soon as you start having requirements and layers of legal issues –
Is a home visit less litigious, less problematic?
It has a different standard associated with it.
It's not right. Why can't – if a doctor's a doctor, a patient needs their help, that's it, period.
That's it, period.
B.
All right. So we are – are you on there now?
We're live.
Okay. They're going to be on Facebook
Live. We're coming on live. So – and the other thing is William Carlos Williams. Huh?
We're now live with Facebook. Are we live on two Facebooks?
Instagram.
Eden Sassoon from Real Housewives. This is
you're a social media queen.
Well, come on.
We're doing this live podcast to Eden's people that will be airing in a couple of weeks. And please do ask your questions of us, whatever they might be. We'll try to answer them here. But homunculus, let me tell you about
homunculus.
This. Okay. I think you know that I hope you know that we have these little homunculi in our.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Please tell me.
Our body landscape, the motor and sensory landscape, is represented on the cortex in our body. There's a place for our eyes, our brain, our hands, our legs, there are two strips. One strip is sensory, one strip is motor. Okay.
Okay.
And we've known that forever. You can zap a part of your brain and you'll move your hand and that kind of thing. And there are things that get fed up through the body into that region of sensory, but there's two components of pain. That, for instance, discomfort. There's a somatic component, which is you cut your finger off, it hurts. You register it in the cortex. You will respond to it.
You also see it.
Well, there's another part of the brain called the insula cortex, which gives the affective meaning, the misery index of things that come out of your body. And it turns out these three big systems here, these parathymic, sympathetic, feed into it. The vagus nerve is a way more interesting thing than I was ever trained in medical school. It turns out like 70% of it is coming out of the body and goes to a region of the brain called the nucleus tractus solitarius, which has another homunculus, but it's sort of a vague homunculus about the feelings of the body. And then that goes to the insular cortex. And that's why the insular cortex fires off so crazily if people have any sort of unprocessed trauma in their body.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're now starting to understand this stuff.
And that's a way to break down pain in America.
Because it's to shut your brain off.
It's all interwoven.
Don't you think if you had enough, I hate to use the word control, but understanding of the brain and control, and you really were, your mind was in your body, you could.
There's two aspects to that. Yes, to make it simple, but the first aspect is embedding yourself in your body and feeling what comes out of it without having your hair catching on fire, without being flipped out emotionally. But a lot of people can't tolerate that or can't connect to that. And the way we connect to it is in intimate contact with other people.
Yeah, I was going to say, who we
send feelings across to.
Thank
you metabolize
you just
it.
Summed up
and
my
send
season
it
on Housewives. Thank
okay, good.
You.
Doesn't right. technology.
Pay attention.
Doesn't technology disconnect us from
yes,
human
100%. 100%. So, any questions coming up on Facebook?
Any.
No?
But. Some technology, when you're connected to, and the way that I share on my Instagram and Facebook, there's whether it be through a photo and the words that I say really impact people's lives and then give them, you know, whether I'm leading by example or whatever it is, some motivation or inspiration
yes,
to
and,
go
and
out and do
correct.
Something.
Correct. And I don't mean the technology is purely evil or worthless. What I'm saying is it interferes with that connectedness.
Yes.
It
yes.
gets
think
the
about
it.
The neighborhood you grew up in, right? Wasn't there a lot of different kinds of people? Remember the names of the people and who, what their deal was. Mm-hmm. And like Irene Erdman lived on the corner, and if we rode our bikes, it was like a cliche. Over her lawn, she'd come running out, and she'd run over to my mom's house. There were interesting people that did talk about health and wellness and did talk about marriages being healthy. And
marriages.
There was community mm-hmm. in a neighborhood mm-hmm. in America up until,
well,
it seems the, like the 1980s.
The theory was that there was the family. And
yes.
then your neighbors.
Yes.
And then your community. And then you became politically present in your city and township. That's democracy.
The
yeah, that was the theory.
And you lived in the same house, regardless of how much money you made.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
But
Facebook. Hold on. Facebook wants to ring in.
This doesn't.
Does level of intoxication actually help your body survive during physical trauma?
He's talking about. I think that what they might be talking about, ask him, is like if you're really drunk and you get in a car accident, you're kind of relaxed.
I think more.
It is kind of true.
I think
some
of that is true.
I've been in a few car accidents.
I think
some
of that is true.
I've done some things not sober, and they were.
What is it about that?
I think addicts and alcoholics are phenomenal survivors. I think that's more than anything is the deal. I think
don't.
Yeah, I think the relaxation helps, but I think really they're unbelievable survivors.
But you're
that's
at a different state when you're in your normal state.
True, but that's why the gene. Persists,
right?
Because
well, the
there's
two
an evolutionary advantage to it.
But
in
let's go
situations.
Over my worst car accident. I don't think I would have gotten in it if I wasn't
right.
in a blackout drunk. But the fact that the telephone pole was
that?
Right next to me.
Right? Why would you say that? What would you think that? Huh?
But the telephone pole was right next to me, and I just got out of the car. It was right all the way to the dashboard of the car.
Sure.
And people were like, what the hell? And I'm like, oh, my God, cops are coming. I got to get out of here.
Oh, Jesus.
Here's a good one.
All right, let's go. Hang on.
Here's a good one. Why do hangovers seem to get worse as age progresses?
Right? It's got to be hormones. It's got to be so many
dehydration.
Everything does.
Yep.
Everything
gets
is worse when you
me.
Get older.
I think that's
I don't know. I'm better than right now.
Yeah, I've hydrolyte is something I've stand behind here, and that
lack
really
of vitamins.
Hydrolyte is this rehydration solution.
It's right there.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Yeah.
Oh, and, can and I these have one?
Yeah, yeah. Here,
Drew invented it, but no. He doesn't get the credit.
I'm going to take these home.
Oh, and it's and it, you're first lady of
love. Is there a lot of sugar in here or no?
No, very little.
No sugar.
No, there's a little bit of
oh, I'm sure.
You can see
just
on
because.
But the this is the same as an IV. You get the same
I
thing.
Love IV yeah. drips.
Well, you don't need it. You got this. You don't need the IV.
Really?
I'm telling you. You're just then you're just getting high.
See, she's a part of that. But I know where she have you done ozone?
No.
Vitamin drips?
I do vitamin stem drips cells? All the time. Stem cells, if they could do my whole face with them, I'd do them. I do spray.
So, Drew, can you read that email from the guy in Jersey?
Yes. Okay.
Which Jersey.
One? Yeah, I got a Jersey email here. Let me do that once.
We got a hangover question and a car accident question. Okay, that was good.
We're going to New Jersey, so.
So, Bob and I are going to go speak on behalf of this New Jersey hospital.
I want to go.
And Chris Christie is going to be there, and now I'm hearing Ted Cruz might be there.
No, this no, Chris is like, Chris that, is it's becoming their issue, though.
Good. Hold on.
Cravings. Getting hydrated.
All right. This is from George, and he says, I heard that you'll be in New Jersey speaking about opioid addiction and mental health problems. It's extremely bad. I'm a police officer for 13 years.
Wow.
I've dealt with 3 to 6 people a week with mental illness and heroin addiction in a 1-square-mile town, and services here don't evaluate right. We need help. Yeah.
Okay. So that's caused by the drug epidemic. Drew, you can't tell me that's just drug – that's a percentage of drug addicts
let me tell you
that
story.
Always exist.
No, correct.
Big Pharma created the drug epidemic in America. Will you give me that?
No, they contributed to it. The thing that did – I remember being there in 1999 when those judgments were handed down putting physicians in prison.
But that
for
was
not,
Big Pharma behind it. Who do you think was behind it? The people?
The attorneys.
Yeah. Who was paying their fees?
The people. They got huge money out of it. It was nothing to do with the drug companies.
Oh, God.
Go look at the cases. Go look at the cases.
What do you believe?
I think the drug companies have tons of
drug companies
so
are the biggest profiting industry in the world above petroleum.
And let me tell you, the evil story in all this is manufacturing Suboxone right now. Why don't you get on their case?
I'm getting on it.
Okay.
But there's so much. How do you?
So the point is, that's what turned the tide. When physicians believed they were going to prison, not malpractice, prison, if they didn't adequately treat pain. It was the weirdest experience ever. We all, when somebody would come in and say, I'm in pain, we should go see a pain management. We can't take the liability. It became elder abuse. That's not something a drug. Elder abuse. What drug can I do with that? And reckless negligence. That
okay,
was the
let
case.
Me attack it from another angle.
Hang on.
How are we 5% of the world's population and take almost 50% of the world's drugs?
It's insane. I know that. I understand
Who
that.
Who caused that? Lawyers?
Doctors did.
Okay.
Now
we're getting somewhere.
Oh, no. But what are the – you think
She's
a drug –
She's being awfully you, quiet right
I'm,
now.
I'm listening. I'm taking
but
it
Bob,
all in.
Do you think a drug company comes in our office and
no,
you
I don't.
Prescribe?
I don't
no,
think
we,
that.
We screwed up big time. Pain is the fifth vital sign. That was by lawyers and physician and advocacy groups. Pain is the fifth vital sign. That had nothing to do with the drug companies.
But
I'm not
on,
saying the drug
question.
Companies weren't
if
duplicitous. They
were. If you're in pain or you're depressed or you're having anxiety and someone, a doctor or a drug company, saying, this is going to help you and you're desperate, you're going to listen to them.
See, there's the public. So I that's mean, what happened
that's
in
true.
His hometown. There were people that never would have been exposed to opiates.
Oh, for sure.
Never would have.
Oh, for sure.
And now they're perceived as mentally ill and running around and their lives are destroyed by this coalition.
But at some point, we as humans have to step in and say, hey, I can't do this. I have to stop, or it's a problem, or I'm an addict. Or
Well, that's the part we're trying to get focused
on. Somebody just mentioned NET therapy. Thoughts? It ties in with this.
I don't know what NET is.
NET.
NAD?
NET. They tell them to explain.
Explain what that is.
But listen. So I was in a situation in a town nearby here where this guy was coming by. He was in a halfway house. He was an addict with chronic schizophrenia. He was coming by and violently attacking people that worked in the facility. And he had just come out of a 24-hour stay in a hospital. He didn't want to take his meds, and he became violent.
I know, that's crazy.
So we had to call the cops. One of the guys in uniform is an ER doctor, and I go, look, you have to go to those doctors and tell them they can't mill him through. He's not happier because of this. They're just milling him through and doing what the law requires them to do because there's no resources to treat that guy. You must – you tell them, a doctor's evaluated this, and I will hold them accountable if this guy hurts somebody. Put him on a long-acting. Give him a shot. I know it's expensive. God damn it, put him on it. And that
but
was that.
Then what?
And because then I called the I said I will hold those doctors responsible. Well, magically they did. Because if you hold them to the liability, oh, now we can do it. So it's the system is all screwed up. It's just and that's nothing to do with addiction.
Well,
that's just being able to give people what they need without, oh, you can't do that, or we can't keep them. All this, the bureaucracy and the laws screw up the care.
Well, the police officer that has the question is saying, I suspect, do you really think that in a 1 mile square area, there's three schizophrenic people in a small...
No, it's all addiction.
It's all addiction.
Yeah, it's all addiction.
I was just going to say, do you visit Skid Row?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a mess. Yeah. I physically turn into I can't handle it. Yeah. I can't handle it. And I was just there.
You should do some stuff on Housewives about it because that would raise awareness and maybe we'd do something.
I was there for Easter and I did and I usually do it and I'd go down and we'd cut hair and we'd bring everything and I wanted to sit and have conversations. I actually made a friend cowboy who was a vet and he was the only sober one. He's like, they're crazy. I mean, but I would talk to women. She'd have a knife in her bag and for some reason we're talking and talking. But she brought up the Kardashians. I'm like, hold on. Where'd you sleep last night? She's like, in that guy's tent over there. And I just kind of got in and I just let him do whatever he wanted so I could sleep somewhere. I'm like, whoa.
America.
And then she starts talking about the Kardashians. I'm like thinking, this is so...
There you go.
Insane.
It's insane. New myth. But it's funny. I was talking to a guy on the radio. I do a daily radio program. And this guy calls in. He goes, hey, man, I was on the street. I was home. Now I drive a truck. And he goes, I know exactly what homeless people need. I go, really? Tell me. He goes, well, you need a place where there's a bed and they feed them. And this place should be populated by doctors and nurses and social workers and vocational rehab
specialists. Hospital.
It's a psychiatric. I said, yeah, that's what they need. They need lots of hospital care. We need to force appropriate care on people that don't understand the condition there.
But I think that the public is confused. The public is confused about the people on the street that the policeman's talking about. He's seeing it as half addiction, half mental health, or how do you tell that it's mental health, or what is addiction?
You don't call it mental health until they've been sober 6 months.
Right.
It's pretty simple.
Do you want to read that other question?
The other email question. Which one is that? There's several here.
I hope that policeman comes
to the third one. Mental health turns to drugs, or drugs turns into mental
health.
Because
we've got to know where it came from.
No, I get it.
Where it came from was the movie that your dad probably was around, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. Screwed everything up.
Michael Douglas produced it before he was an actor.
It's true.
And it portrayed psychiatric hospitals as hells on earth.
They were not.
And the public, and I hate to say it, the more conservative people who want to save a little bit of money, saw this opportunity where the public outcry against these psychiatric hospitals caused by One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. They just said, okay, let's just let them all out and run free.
There were two things.
And that created the homeless population in Los Angeles.
That's true. But there were two. It was a coalition of people wanting to save money on the right and people saying, you have no right to hold these people on the left.
Yeah, they should be free.
This is cruel.
And this is what's happening now, though.
That's those people downtown that your friend said are those. Oh. They're crazy.
Yeah.
So let's say the pain scale. If you had to say one thing caused the opiate epidemic in America, it's the pain scale.
But the pain scale was a response to legal and professional and patient advocacy groups that got together and said doctors must assess pain as the fifth vital sign. That's how important it is. It's as important as their blood pressure
and
their pulse.
Profited from that law?
The pain management doctors who went nuts on it.
Big Pharma sold $30 billion worth of OxyContin.
No, I understand they were duplicitous. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Absolutely. But it was perpetrated by my profession.
So you don't think there's a conspiracy? It just was right place, right time.
What would the conspiracy be? Doctors have no relationship with drug companies. You don't get anything. You can't even have them in your office.
In the 90s, they did.
They would get courted by them a little bit, but there was already being cracked down by them. But you don't get anything for prescribing. All you get is the visit. You get the patient visit. And what they would do is make the patient visit essentially a Starbucks visit. They let the patient come in, see a nurse, like a marijuana dispensary, and tell them what they want. It was the same thing. And they would not even see a doctor. Doctor would just co-sign it. So they could see 1,000 patients a day who come in and just walk out with bags.
But then they get paid on, okay, I give them what they want.
They get paid for a visit.
Not cheap.
We got to figure out how to have a business like that. Well, we make all the money and they do all the dirty work.
Is her people saying anything?
They said, ask Eden about her Twitter crystal
challenge. They love my crystals and my hugs, and I'm that sober woman.
Have you ever met the hugging nun?
To Amma?
Yeah.
She's not a nun, though.
What is she?
She's Amma. She's a spiritual being.
I waited in line
till 1 a.m. and then I had to go. But it was an incredible experience. And I think that our hug would...
Being hugged by this woman changes you.
Oh, for sure. No.
We got to go. I believe that can
happen.
You got to wait like 2 days to be hugged by
Yeah, but they have an incredible dancing and singing, hugging people. I'm going to turn into Amma.
There you go.
We all should turn to Almas.
I agree.
Almas the myth.
And then people talk about, please explain. No, she's incredible. How is it that you're so uncomfortable holding on to someone, whether you know them or not? First of all, we're all spiritual beings. We're energy, and we're stuck in this body as we know it. So your mind tells you, oh, this isn't right. I'm uncomfortable. I can't hug this person. Why? Why? There's no difference between you and I. And right now, when you tell someone you love them, is it because you love their being or their spiritual essence of, it doesn't matter that I met you 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I can love you who you are for as long as I've known you because I feel that connection, or I'm attracted to your mind or whatever it may be. But no, society says, you don't know that guy. You can't love him. Bullshit. I love him.
Default
setting. Hey, wait, really quick. Kenny wanted us to talk about NET.
Yeah.
It's a mind-body technique that uses methodology of finding and removing neurological imbalances related to the physiology of unresolved, and then it goes dot, dot, dot.
Trauma.
Simone kind of into?
No. There's a lot of stuff like that out there. He should know a lot of stuff. And the guy named Bessel van der Kolk is sort of the leading mind trying to figure out what kind of, and Alan Shore trying to figure what kind of bodily based
treatments. Alan Shore has been around a long time.
Can I tell you what I experience? And this has something to, I see an acupuncturist, and he'll go in and he'll release my energy. And then he's like the day before Thanksgiving, he's like, oh shit, Eden. He's like, really? You want to do this before Thanksgiving? I'm like, Afshin, what's going on? He goes, okay, I'll get in there. So he'll release me through acupuncture, and then he'll find where I'm holding it. And then he'll verbally talk about what it is, and we'll release it, and whether I'm screaming or, I mean, a lot of people, even, you know, Tony Robbins, you use your energy to release the physical pain or sensation because your mind holds on to it. And so we just work through that, and all of a sudden it's gone. It's shifted. It's
regulated.
Gone.
I would call it regulated.
Well, it's for me, it's gone. I mean, the more you do it, the longer like anything, you work your muscle, you work your mind, you work your bicep.
I think people need to figure out more of these bodily based things that work for them.
Just sitting.
Have you been with a shaman ever?
Uh-uh.
Incredible. They use music and sound and drum work and beats to tap into what your body's holding onto. So you release it. She'll come up here, and all of a sudden my brain's going like this, and I'm tapping into something physically within my body. And she's like, what's going on? And at this time, I felt my ovaries. And she's like, what is it? And when I was a kid, I had 2 abortions. And it was coming out through her shaman work, tapping into it, and she gave me the permission. It's okay. These had to pass through you to, I mean, we worked through, maybe I was holding it in my body, obviously. Who goes through a surgery, 2 surgeries like that, mind-body connection, and just, oh, it's okay, and never even talks about it.
How many people just sit still? That's the other thing.
Thank you.
That my dad used to do. He'd get up very early in the morning, he'd just sit in this kitchenette area and just sit there.
he was depressed.
Well, I mean, but he was centered.
All right, let's get centered.
No. We're going to save that for the next show because we're running out of time.
He was kind of depressed. He ended up killing himself.
Your dad did?
Yeah. Well, he stopped taking his blood thinning medicine on purpose.
Oh, wow.
So we had somebody ask how much that cost, the acupuncture.
It's
and
not
the,
that much. Helping wellness is not nearly as much as real medicine.
Find the right people and search out what it is you're
feeling.
It's
like getting a massage. It's like,
oh,
what?
I live for my massage.
$100 or something? Or
200 bucks.
He'll do me for 2 hours for $120.
For most people,
that's still a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
But you can find, I would find the right people. You want to be careful.
Right.
Hey, you know what, Drew? When they're standing in line at Walgreens getting all their drugs and it's $280, they don't have a problem paying that.
Or you're going to Starbucks and drinking.
And sicker and sicker.
Yep.
I understand, but when I say $99 for heel, people go, the average person can't come up with that, and yet they can for lots of other things.
They can go to the ER.
Don't get my Republican bone started.
Does anyone talk about food?
They can afford cable TV and cell phones.
What about food and what we put in our body?
Too much for struggling addicts, somebody said.
Too much for struggling addicts?
Yeah.
If you eat clean and what you put in, you really will give back. And yes. It's who we are.
There's all kinds of nonprofits that do sweat lodges all kinds of stuff.
I live to sweat. Go to Bikram Yoga. Buy a membership. Sweat it out.
$40 a month.
Incredible.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up the Facebook.
Okay.
And
thank you all for watching the Facebook
Throw
live.
Kisses. Everybody
thank
loves
you.
See ya.
And somebody said that Bob and Drew are geniuses.
Yeah, they are.
So
they are.
Yeah, we got a good. Yeah.
Well, check out This Life, everybody. That we do it every week. It goes up Mondays. It goes up Mondays. Go to drdrew.com. Check out our family podcast there. This Life, Bob and I do this every week.
Tell
we have
everyone
great
over
guests.
There to do it.
Yeah, we have great guests, and it really is a really good podcast. And we gravitate towards recovery because it's me and Bob, but we really want to talk about everything in this life. And Eden's been a nice way to sort of expand
catching
what
up with these genius minds.
Work creates.
Yeah, you guys are a great team.
I want to come back one day and just sit and listen.
No problem. You can also
good at that, right?
Your two new best friends.
All right. Well, signing off. Thank you.
All right. So
I want to ask one last question.
Yeah.
So you, Eden was your name that your parents gave you, right?
Is my name.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Do you feel like that's a burden?
So
when you give a hippie kid a name, I think it's a burden. Lots of my friends change their name because they didn't want to have the name.
I think that my name is a responsibility. They gave me Eden. So at some point, my therapist said, do you ever think about your name and what it means? I'm like, oh my God, you're absolutely right. And so through the years, if I don't live up to my name, then I'm just an idiot. So I take it on as a responsibility.
That's shame. Shame motivation.
I love it. I love it. Please give me that name and let me live up to it. Thank you, Dad.
Right.
Thank
there's
you.
Shame and then there's toxic shame, right? So she has, you know, okay
she
shame.
She has Eden shame.
But
I also think being my father's daughter, that's a legacy. If I don't live up to that and I don't give back and I don't lead by example, then I, again, am an idiot.
You bring up an interesting point, though, just something to make a note of. Did you have a punk rock phase?
No, okay. Not really.
Yeah, extreme then, personal responsibility, I can see.
I understand, but she, her parents were not hippies. Because all the kids...
I'm more of a hippie than they ever were.
All the
what
kids,
were they? Were they? What was your mom like?
My mom's great. She was an actress, model, and then she met my dad. She was in Burbank, and then she turned into, oh my God, I'm Vidal Sassoon's wife. And then they were always ahead of their time in health and beauty. They were very much health and beauty until she got into alcohol.
That's hippie stuff.
No, it's business. It's business.
Oh,
and health and
business
beauty.
Stuff disguises hippie
but,
stuff.
But it wasn't just business. They lived.
I know.
Oh,
I
yeah,
get it.
They,
I get
they
it. But,
did
but,
it.
But the hippie, the kids of hippie parents became the hardcore punk rockers in the 80s and 90s.
We weren't hippies.
Yeah, that's how you can tell the parents are hippies. The,
I
the parents,
believe
the kids
in free
rejected
love.
That completely and became punkers.
Yeah, there was, you know.
No punk.
You know how many Los Angeles girls are named Rain.
But you, do you
Sunshine.
Think Eden is hippie?
Sunshine.
Do you think
I
Eden
don't,
is...
I
no,
don't.
It's
no.
More of like
I kind of lumped it in with hippie.
Powerful. No. Got it. And that's because I'm in my overalls and
well,
my
maybe
long
it's
hair
because
and my beads.
When I was a kid,
I want to be a
my
hippie.
Dad got very disgruntled. Next, two doors down from our vacation house in Palm Springs, Adam and Eve rented the house on our... You know,
that freaked him out.
And they'd walk around naked.
Oh my God.
My dad
like
walked around
71.
Naked every Sunday.
See, he was a hippie.
No, he was a nudist. He was a total nudist. He didn't give a shit about anybody being. Yeah.
Drew's fading more towards hippie.
He
now.
Never did drugs.
No,
he
because the 70s had all these MFers that were self actualized and were casting off.
He wasn't hippie. Yeah,
they were not hippies.
No,
they were not hippies.
In the 70s, he was even in the 60s, he was the head of the empire. He was an artist. He was creative.
Yeah, they're casting.
Yeah.
All right, we got to go. We got to wrap it up. We got to wrap it up. Eden, website?
Amazing. My website? No, you might go to my Instagram. It's the most fun. It's Eden Sassoon.
Got it. Yeah. We'll do that. Go to her salon. Go to her
Pilates studios. Pilates get studios. In there. Let me kick your ass.
And we'll see you next time.
Lost in a tropic wave, seized with every motion as you slowly lose your clothes. Wanna beaches of Mexico. What can I do for you? Erase all of your burdens so we never have to go. The sea, a seductive blue. Only she can reach us on the beaches of Mexico.